Hey folks, and welcome to the Daily Ratings Podcast. It's a show where each week we'll sit down with Vincent Daly to get his thoughts on the latest movies he's been watching, both older films and new releases. And don't worry, there's no spoilers. Vince will give a brief review of the movie, share some thoughts, and of course, then rate the film. The Daily Ratings are always fair, honest, and most importantly, they're consistent. On today's show, Vince will be rating and reviewing. We have Kung Fu Panda by Mark Osborne and John Stevenson, Kung Fu Panda 2 by Jennifer Yu Nelson, Kung Fu Panda 3 by Alejandro Carloni and Jennifer Yu Nelson, and finally, we have newly released Kung Fu Panda 4, directed by Mike Mitchell and Stephanie Stein. So it is Kung Fu Panda Pandemonium, folks. Stay tuned and enjoy. Vincent Daly, how we doing, buddy?
Tommy boy, how's it going?
It's going okay. On this end of the table, how was Jack Black and Poe and all the friends? How was your week, buddy?
Sometimes you wonder if they're even in the room recording with Jack Black or not. Hey, week was not what I wanted to have sandwiched in between Dune and our 90s special.
I know.
I'll tell you what, folks. It is a hell of a study on DreamWorks with one of their probably top properties in the Mount Rushmore of DreamWorks, Kung Fu Panda or Kung Poo Panda.
I always, even when I'm saying it to myself, like for the past like 3 weeks, I just said Kung Poo Panda.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, you know, it is one of the most, one of their most financially successful franchises.
Oh, yeah.
I think Shrek
and
Despicable Me.
No, that's Illumination. Despicable Me.
Okay, all right. It's all within the Universal house, though, correct?
I don't think so.
You sure?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's Shrek, Kung Fu Panda, How to Train Your Dragon, and probably Trolls is the fourth, just because those are some moneymakers, especially them copying Illumination style of license-heavy soundtracks and whatnot.
Right.
So.
See, yes, those are all DreamWorks properties.
Yes.
But I think also Universal... Illumination is under the Universal umbrella.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's why I think with like the parks and stuff,
the
Universal parks,
okay.
The Minions are in there, all those players are in there.
Okay.
But DreamWorks, I guess you're right. Shrek, How to Train Your Dragon was like massively successful.
Absolutely. So, Ants?
Was Ants DreamWorks?
Yeah, Ants was DreamWorks'
first
one.
What a failure.
Boom. Are we going to get the birthday picks this episode?
So Vin's bringing this up, folks, because... one of the birthday movies, it's knocked off the list, but it was going to be A Bug's Life. It was going to be one of the birthday movies.
It was just so great.
It didn't make the cut, though.
Oh, man. The head-to-head there, Pixar and DreamWorks. I mean, that's honestly another thing. I mean, I feel like these being kids' movies, are they all acceptable? Yes. Are they all kids' movies? Sure. But I think the skin of the game for me this week was kind of looking at the business and the structure of DreamWorks. Movie to movie, and these are some big gaps in between those, and how DreamWorks changed and how the business model changed of how they're pushing out or what projects they're greenlighting.
Really weird that they came back to the property so many years later.
Yeah,
and it's just I don't know. I mean, we'll get into four if it was like this great return.
And they're talking about five. Apparently,
they are talking about five.
Yeah. Or Mike Mitchell, he said, just stay tuned for more.
I mean, if it brings in money, we'll get into the fourth one and everything. It's a weird comeback. But yes, kids' movies, sure. A kids' movie is a kids' movie. Wish is totally fine for a kids' movie.
Mm-hmm.
But even kids, no. Kids go a great movie.
Kids, no.
Versus
kids,
a not good kids' movie.
Yeah.
Real quick, Oscar notes were this.
Ooh.
Oscars were this weekend. We both didn't watch. Both had zero, not even out of spite. We just had no interest.
Yeah. We were talking about this before recording here, folks. There was something about the combination of it being March and like Dune already coming out. We're like in 2024, like fully now.
Yep.
and 2023 is super behind us. But also, like, I'm curious, for anyone out there that actually watches all the movies together, just like for their own kind of curiosity or to keep up with the Oscars, do you find a need or a desire to watch the Oscars after all that? Because my opinion is like, or at least my feeling is, once I finally watch all these movies, it's kind of like, yeah, I know what one kind of, for me.
Yes.
I don't really have a desire to be, to see it, other than maybe like some curiosities of if someone messed up on a speech or something like that.
but the problem is, you watch the movies, but you take paragraphs, notes per movie.
Sure.
You know, we cover it multiple times. We already did our own award show.
Right, right.
Like months ago.
Yeah.
So it's more than just sitting down watching a movie. I think if you just sit down, watch it because it's getting some buzz, you might be interested to see.
That's I think Poor Things coming to Hulu or something like that.
I think, yeah, Holdovers is on Peacock. I think Oppenheimer's on Peacock. And I think it's, I think if you give it a watch, it's like, all right, tune in to the Oscars, how is this going to do? And I think there might be a group of people out there that love like the side bits and the reading of the cue card bits before you announce, you know, your minute and a half that you get to be funny before you announce a thing. I mean, I can't stand it personally. But I think some people do like the theater, the show of it.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
That we definitely do not.
Right.
But basically.
Yeah, I got.
Yeah, go ahead.
Three, maybe four bullets.
Okay.
More like op and sweeper. but congrats. Well deserved for Killian and everyone and Nolan and Robert Downey Jr. Huge congrats to Godzilla Minus One. For the VFX win, I would say, you know, it shows that a $10 million budget can compete with the $250 million budget with the right resources and the right passion behind it. And I would say...
Do you think it should have won? What else was nominated for that?
Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I don't know. I forget.
Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was happy with it.
No, it's cool.
And VFX nuts are, you know, I mean, that's I think, the first Oscar win for any Godzilla. So
yeah.
Well-deserved. And I would say, believe it or not, the new structure to the main actor awards being presented by multiple actors, a big waste of time. I did kind of enjoy it a little bit more than just them rolling the scenes.
Okay. I don't think I liked it. It was exhausting. I didn't even
watch. Some were definitely better than others, too. Like, I feel like there was a comparison game.
The best part, oh my gosh, yeah. The best part of the night, I would say. I mean, I'm glad. Hats off to Divine Joy Randolph.
Yes.
Or Divine Randolph Joy. And that was great. And then Nick Cage doing that, the honoring Paul Giamatti. But the thing was just like, with the actress and actresses where you have the five come up and then it was a little tedious.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the set was dark.
Mm.
I don't know. It was like, what are we doing, a gothic renaissance here in the Oscars? Very dark stage, very dark backdrop.
I didn't take note of that.
And I was just like, this is moody in a bad way, in my opinion. So I didn't love the set. And other than that, I don't know. Did you have another note?
My half note is, Jesus, Al Pacino, like, get him on hospice. he's done. I mean, not only did he kind of soil Oppenheimer's moment, you know, it was just like, I don't know.
What did you think of, what did you think of Jimmy Kimmel?
I never liked Jimmy Kimmel, but that's just me.
Okay.
I know Kimmel is obviously
beloved
for keep on getting this job, you know.
I guess. Did you think it was a weird interaction with him and Robert Downey Jr.? Did you see that bit?
I saw that. The internet, I feel like, is blowing that out a little bit much. I don't know. What are your vibes on it?
I care very little.
I care very little, too.
But it did kind of seem like Robert Downey Jr. was just like, what? Can you move on to another guy?
Right.
And then other than that, I think maybe the best pre-script bit basically was John Mulaney doing a minute and a half on Field of Dreams. And it was great because we just covered it this past summer.
Yep.
And I was like, word, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Mulaney should be the one hosting.
Absolutely.
You know,
The best, I mean, all award shows are just so terrible, but the best, like, knockout, absolutely murdered at hosting was him and who's the other guy? Who does like Big Mouth on Netflix?
Oh,
why can't I think of his name?
I can't think of his name.
Anyway, those two together did the Spirit Awards.
Oh, really?
And then I think they did him again. By far, the funniest.
Really,
it was so enjoyable.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Actually, you particularly would love their intro monologue. Yeah. Very good.
I'll check
very
that
funny.
Out.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, Oscar. I don't know. I think Divine Joy Randolph. Excellent.
No major upsets, I would say.
No.
You know, people obviously were a little split on Emma Stone versus
Lily Gladstone.
Yes.
Especially Emma won, right?
Emma won, right, which was not the case. You know, the Oscars kind of split off from what was Lily Gladstone winning a lot
everything.
Of everything. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's because she won so much. I mean, my contention was she just wasn't on screen enough to be anything worth Best Actress.
Interesting.
I think she deserves. I think she just stick her with the Best Supporting, and then she can win Best Supporting.
True,
because she's a bigger presence on screen than I don't know. Divine. I love that Divine one.
Yes, yes.
And like absolutely. Very wholesome acceptance speech. Yep, she was just like overwhelmed. It was great. It was great. Yep. And I think that was it. Nick Cage was funny. But yeah, no, I mean,
that's it.
Marty ended up with nothing, you know, like Killers of the Flower Moon ended up with nothing.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And then also
Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro. Why was he like angry? It looked like he was like pissed off.
I think that's him. I think he probably hates being there.
Mm.
You know, I mean, Martin Scorsese always jokes, this is the guy that falls asleep at dinner parties. That maybe something political, too, because it's just so he can't do anything on screen without talking politics.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I guess I'm not in his press circuit.
Oh, he loves it. He loves it, yeah. So who knows? But I guess that was that. That was the Oscars. Folks, go back to earlier in the year to our Tom Daley Awards.
Yes.
Which people really enjoyed. We got some feedback on that.
Yeah, especially the custom awards, not the old song and dance.
Yeah.
You know, our custom awards like the Houdini Award or Sweet Sell Smell Success, you know.
People like
that's
better than the Oscars. Oscars got a little bit more views, a little bit more listens, but that's all right. All right.
Also, another reason why I didn't watch is I didn't have cable. You know, I was like, oh, it's not streaming? So I was just like, I'll wait a few hours. Check out the highlights on YouTube.
All right. Let's get into Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu.
I just want to remind folks before we actually, I do want to remind folks now. Next week is our special. Basically, it's a new type of special that we're entering into the podcast.
Mm.
We're doing a deep dive into a must-watch film on the website. There's not many 90% and up in on there's 11, 12, 13, 14 only out of the basically thousands of films that's on the site. So we are doing No Country for Old Men. Mm-hmm. It has a 91%, and like I said, it's a deep dive on it. So we are going to get into spoilers. It's an entire episode on just one film, and it's going to be a blast. So
yeah.
So give it a watch in the next coming. I mean, it's such a good movie. It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Give it a watch. We're going to do a deep dive on it, and it's going to be fun. We're excited for just a new kind of special. And something to highlight these must-watches.
Absolutely.
Which deserve a little love.
If we come across them, like with Dune, organically, those are just going to be in the episodes. But that also maybe makes in this must-watch special, we're going to be trying a lot of new things with format and questions and spoilers. You know, the understanding is it's worth a watch. Come with it watched in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, as we all kind of always kind of fit into this kind of this book club aspect with like director studies and whatnot. But with that new format also opens up the possibility of returning to something and then having that as the spoiler discussion as, you know, sometimes that is
right.
All you want.
Yeah.
When it comes to something really good. So
okay. All right. Well, with that, let's get into the good animation stuff here, folks. It's Kung Fu Panda 1, or just Kung Fu Panda. It came out in 2008, which is, man, it's like...
Unreal.
God, it's crazy how time flies. I was getting older at this time,
sure.
So I think I might have watched it once. Like we might have rented it or something. Mm. We watched the first one. But Kung Fu Panda, I'm really unfamiliar with.
Yeah, I've never seen any of these.
Yeah, right. So. Never grew up with them.
Yeah.
Just a little bit too old for us. Let's get into it, though. How does this original Kung Fu Panda fare? How does it set up characters? What's the story beats? And how did you like it?
Well, I think this starts off really strong as far as the first entry goes. And folks, like we kind of talked about a little bit in the opening here, this is the start of a very successful franchise, combining both fun martial arts action and cute talking animal cast. No doubt that was fueled by the success of other animal-themed projects like Shark Tale and Madagascar, all keeping DreamWorks in fighting condition against their juggernaut competition, Pixar, especially in 2008, before Pixar had even the inkling of falling off.
Yeah.
And I would say the only blemish here production-wise is related to a few lawsuits claiming the original idea for this. But if you ask me, a cute fighting panda concept probably sounds like it was floating around the space for quite some time.
To be tapped.
Right. I'm not knocking any original, you know, inspiration or concept art that might have been floating around, but a fighting Kung Fu Panda really does sound like something that would have been in the brain trusts of Pixar in the 90s, or these legendary brainstorming meetings that you hear about and then making like 8 projects from it.
Right.
Directing-wise, Mark Osborne comes from the live-action sequences for SpongeBob and directing Weird Al music videos. So, hey, props. That's awesome.
Right in our wheelhouse.
SpongeBob, Weird Al, oh yeah.
It's on live. Poodle Hat Tour, 03.
I love that. That's great. John Stevenson's, on the other hand, is already a talent at DreamWorks, something that will become common for the rest of the series in talking about these directors and how they rise up. His career as a storyboard artist being super impressive, though. Some very cool projects under his belt. And I would say that's really the same for all of our directors. All of them, while they may have a lot of time at DreamWorks, have some sort of origin that was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And made me interested to see if I could spot creative inspiration, color work. You know, they're all storyboard artists in some way. That seems to be the direct pipeline to directing at Pixar.
It makes sense, but kind of interesting that that's what they consistently tap.
At least for Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah.
Definitely could be different for the many, many, many properties.
Yeah.
You know, the simultaneously projects running. But yeah, that's what I was finding. And definitely a little bit of an interesting point. And in addition to scratching the itch for me watching these kids' movies of, let me see about the business of animation. Because it really is a business. Like I was saying before, like, you know, I think all movies are art. These are art, but very much a product as well. It is a product made for specific demographics and pumped out on a schedule. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's all movies if you want to take the romanticism out of it.
Yeah.
Or at least the big studio system. So for me, though, that's also a point of enjoyment of tracking what's hot, the many different years that these are released, and what's going on in the studio system of one of the, arguably, the big three in American animation. So
it's always, it's always fun. You can't help it. Us being this age, when you turn them on, I make a Wikipedia and start with, how much was this to make? How much did it make? Just start going down the stats.
Exactly. In Kung Fu Panda, though, we follow the chubby panda Po, one of the only pandas in the Valley of Peace. Day to day, he helps his father run a little noodle shop, but secretly his eyes are set on the crown jewel of the valley, the Jade Palace. The palace is home to the Furious Five, masters of Kung Fu and specialized in their own abilities. Leading them is Master Oogway, an ancient turtle that founded the temple and Kung Fu itself. Pretty awesome. And Master Shifu, a conservative red panda needing to find his next successor. In a clumsy stumble, Po is named the Dragon Warrior, which, in addition to the jealousy of his peers, earns him the attention of Tai Lung, the former candidate now in chains, and earns him a worthy opponent. I would say, much like DreamWorks' star IP, Shrek, a big highlight here is voice acting talent. Across each of these films, the voice cast is absolutely stacked with celebrities and comics for every generation to recognize. And I want to zone in on that every generation to recognize. I feel like if there's a strategy to how the wide voice cast is being picked, is that it really has something for everyone. Just in the sense that this kung fu action, these jokes are also kind of for everyone. Yes, it obviously leans towards a kid, but we've said it many times on the podcast, a good kids movie works for more than just the kid audience.
Yeah.
Works for the adults taking the kids to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I would say similarly, in nearly every film, this wide cast is so wide that certain members get underutilized despite their fame. Good performances in this one obviously include Jack Black. I would say this is now become an iconic role for Jack Black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Poe in the most recent one in Kung Fu Panda 4. Feeling more like Jack Black in Tenacious D than anything else. Ian McShane, of course, playing Tai Lung. Huge, huge villain, and we'll get into the praise of Tai Lung in a second. Also, another real big highlight is the legendary James Hong. I'll save some of my praise for James Hong until Kung Fu Panda 3. I mean, this is an actor that has been in nearly 500 things. I mean, it feels like
Really?
He's such a recognizable voice when it comes to it, and really plays wonderfully into this character of his kind of like this duck adopted noodle shop father. Like, it's just great. One of my favorites of the whole series. I would say not bad performances, but underused are Jackie Chan and Angelina Jolie. These are two huge names.
Yeah.
If I just told you they were in the mix of other comedians like Seth Rogen in The Furious Five, I don't know. I mean, I expected a lot from Jackie Chan. I'm not saying that he's even a great voice actor. I think after watching these movies, he's definitely not a good voice actor,
right?
You know, for the character. But it just having Jackie Chan and Angelina Jolie part of your projects, yes, they have stuff to do. Are they like highlights though? Like Jack Black is a highlight, like other characters, like villains are a highlight? No. You know, again, by no means bad, but just underutilized. And I feel like it's a weird burden that each of these films have, that the cast is impressive when you look at it, but not always are the roles equal.
Does it just come down to money, or just did their characters not have a place that much in the story?
I think it comes down to money for the fourth one, because you see a lot of that just being cut straight up. But I don't know, maybe a combination of both. It's also a 90-minute kids movie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Everyone can't have an arc. So, story-wise, I would say this first one is a highlight for being a little bit inspired when it comes to the story itself, which more and more as this franchise goes on, it just kind of becomes about stylish action. Not a bad thing whatsoever. We'll see in 3, that's a real big highlight. But here, I would say the main themes are shared in the type of Pan-Asian stories that we might have seen in the animation space, or even recently. 2022's Turning Red, and even Everything Everywhere, all tell a story of parental expectations and the pressure to live up to that. While the sequels increasingly become about action, stylish villains, and fleshing out Po's backstory and his family, this first one really strikes a sweet spot with this simple family arc, this arc of expectations, and how that plays into what Po ultimately lives up to become.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a good highlight, because clearly here there was an inspiration to tell kind of a meaningful story where, again, not knocking it, but later on what the series becomes is almost, hey, we haven't made a Kung Fu Panda in a while. Let's go make
it. You can almost feel it. Yeah.
Absolutely, especially with the most recent one. One of the most notable aspects across all four movies is in the composer they share. Do you know what composer
they
share?
I do. Yeah. I have it literally on my screen.
the music done here is by the legendary Hans Zimmer. He's on all four of these. He's attached at the hip.
Sometimes solo.
Yeah. Yes, sometimes solo.
I think on 3, it's just him.
Yeah. I really don't have any notes about the music itself, but this fact made me think of two really stupid jokes that I'm going to air out here now. Okay. Are we ready?
I love the bits.
Okay. All right. You know, I thought it was odd in one of the fights when I heard "Hana Morina." That's joke number one.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Can I get like maybe a 1 through 5 on that one?
That for me, because I saw Dune twice.
Right. Be brutal.
I'm gonna go with a 2.5.
2.5. Okay. I'll take it. I think this one's better. I think it's also more clumsy. You know, I gotta say, Denny took some real creative liberties with the script of Dune, but having Paul say skadoosh really paid off.
That's good. 3 out of 5.
Right. I was dying all week around the concept of skadoosh meaning absolutely nothing. It is just a Jack Black-ism.
It is.
It's just a Jack Black sound effect. It's not a word, it's nothing. It's just Jack Black.
Skadoosh and Paul.
Oh, you know, he said it with the voice.
If only it was in Dune, it would have been fantastic.
When he speaks back to the mother, you know, the mother of the Bene Gesserit, he goes,
skadoosh. And what does she say then? Abomination.
Yeah, you know, all because of Han.
People got to go watch that movie.
Dude, it's a good movie.
Dune is so good.
still top of mind.
Yeah,
folks.
Go see Dune and then sneak in to Pooh 4, Kung Fu Panda 4.
Right, just in time for this skadoosh. Like I mentioned, the series will attempt to outdo the action in each of these entries, but it is all in vain because there is a very, very high bar set with this one. As far as villain introductions go, Tai Lung has a 10 out of 10 action scene here, feeling like an anime so much. There is a, you know, if there really is a single reason to watch this, it is for this sequence here. I love the scene of him escaping the prison so much. It's a great example of only in animation where the concept is elevated so much out of reality and could never be done in live action. I feel like that's what these Kung Fu Pandas, when they're really good in the action realm of it, that's where they shine. Like any good action scene, the setting is what gives us our stakes. Here, Tai Lung is in a trench prison that's a literal pit of hell he has to climb out of. And just the rhythm to the animation is up there with the greats of the medium. Personally, I would put this up there on the level of the Cave of Wonders from Aladdin.
Oh, okay.
Where both are really fun, snappy escape sequences and don't outstay their welcome either. There's a balance also for the runtime that we're not becoming numb to the action. There's a real sweet spot that this achieves. And honestly, I mean, it elevates the movie so much more than I thought. I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot lower on the scale. But I kept on coming back to this action scene. I was like, wow, that's just. I mean,
that's good.
Such a standout.
Because with kids' movies too, it can seem so glossed over.
Oh, yeah.
It could just be just like, okay, here we go. Yep, action scene. Right. Now it's over.
Right.
That's cool. That's cool. That especially on the first one, they come out swinging.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why Tai Lung is flirted as the fake villain of the fourth one with this chameleon.
Right. Yeah,
because of this scene. I mean, this scene is iconic, even among all the fight scenes in Kung Fu.
Okay. That's pretty cool. That's good to hear.
Absolutely. I would say my recommendation here is on that note for lovers of animation and lovers of anime, because there really are so many inventive sequences all over the film. Certainly that comes paired with an appreciation for martial arts stylings as well. The look, the sound, and the feel all holds up, and that is not something that is always the case for 2000s animation. We're going to go ahead and give Kung Fu Panda 2008 a 75.
75 is a pretty good score, Finn.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what we've learned, especially in that Tom Daly's episode too, you, for whatever reason, some of these animated films land on 72. And 72 isn't like a 72 is a classic. Yeah, it's a good animation film right there.
Very solid movie. Yeah.
75 or Kung Fu Panda 1. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If anything of that 72, which I wasn't exactly conscious of for this week, which I'm glad. I don't want to be conscious of my other scores as much as possible, but if anything, that Tai Lung action sequence of when he's escaping, that probably raises it 3 points alone. It's that good. It's
that's really freaking awesome.
Good. Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Let's keep things moving here. That was 08, so they come back in 2011. Mm-hmm. Kung Fu Panda 2. I think the first one, the budget on these first three, I think is 140, 150, then 145.
Oh, okay.
And then the fourth one is like 90 million, which is wild.
Yeah, odd.
It's crazy. Kind of smart. I like it, but...
Certainly that blends into what we've been saying for now a solid year on the podcast and say, you know, we don't need these huge budgets, you know. That's
I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I kind of like there's these a lot of these $30, $40 million films kind of, and then there's these $80, $90, $100 million films that I hope it continues. I hope this is a trend.
Yeah.
Also, but is it just dirty because it's Kung Fu Panda, they're using old tech, they're bringing nothing new to the table, it's rinse and repeat.
Sure, reuse assets even.
Right, got to keep the characters for our parks, you know. We don't want a new ride, so let's just keep it going.
Oh, that's definitely it, for
sure. Anyway, so Kung Fu Panda 2, after the first one was a huge success, how do we return to the characters, and how'd you like it?
I will give away the goat a little bit in that the Kung Fu Panda goes in pairs. It's 1 and 3, and 2 and 4.
It's like Pierce Brosnan's Bond.
I love it, yeah.
Good, bad, good, bad.
Really?
Yeah, yep.
What's the last bad one? Is that the Halle Berry one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's Diamond Face.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Almost tanked the franchise. Clooney Batman tank.
Yeah. It's so fun. That's about right. For Kung Fu Panda 2, I would say...
It's a loose episode, folks. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's freaking Kung Fu Panda. You know, we're having fun here.
Yeah, surprisingly, we're not drinking, despite us drinking on other episodes. By 2011, DreamWorks had a bit of a rough spot. Many of their IPs were being stretched thin by, you know, sequels and sequels and sequels, something that we kind of see in present-day DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
But for at the time, Shrek, the well of Shrek has run dry.
Yeah.
The swamp.
When did Shrek 4 come out? To date, it's one of the best selling films of all time.
Really?
But also, as far as animation goes, it's incredibly
interesting.
That last Shrek was a monster.
Really, mm-hmm. Really. Okay, I'm not sure.
It was around this time, though, right?
Yes, 2010, 2009. Okay. To be safe.
There's a computer right in front of me. But then they start tapping Puss in Boots a little bit. You know,
exactly. And in 4 short years, the priority of the studio shifts drastically towards their new franchise, How to Train Your Dragon.
Mm, yep.
You know, while there's plenty of room for competitors in the family animation space, you know, kids entertainment seemingly having endless money or no ceiling to how much money it can earn, a new challenger would shake up the market 1 year prior. This, of course, is the new challenger of Illumination in 2010, marking the introduction of a soon-to-be giant studio with their instant hit Despicable Me and their infectious approach to a license-heavy soundtrack, really warping the kids' animation space in the years to come.
Yeah, and you were finding that kind of organically doing a deep dive and watching the films.
Yeah.
Illumination, by the way, is a Universal company.
Oh, so they're all under the same hat.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
It's funny how they handle it. It's almost like Disney. You have Disney Animation, but then you have Pixar. You
know, true. Pixar. That's a fair point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good way to explain it.
Wherever they can get their grubby mitts on. Yeah.
So maybe it's the big two. Maybe it's all just big one. Maybe they're all on the same side and making money. Production-wise, this is a big highlight for Jennifer Yeo. Is it Jennifer Yeo or Jennifer Yeo?
Let's go Yeo.
Okay, yeah. A highlight for Jennifer Yeo Nelson, one of the first female and first Asian directors to lead a project like this. Once again, she is a rising talent within DreamWorks to take on this role. But personally, I loved finding out she did storyboarding on 90s cult favorites like Spawn and Dark City. Like, awesome. I mean, in no way was I expecting some Dark City in a DreamWorks project.
I don't even know those titles.
Oh, you know Spawn, right?
I want to say yes, but they sound very you. It sounds like very much like Vin as a kid loving these.
Definitely Spawn. I should not have watched Spawn. But, you know, maybe if DreamWorks made a goth division, we can see some of that work again. but cool stuff. That's a perfect example of these animators having really cool, really interesting resumes coming to these properties. In Kung Fu Panda 2, we are introduced to Lord Shen, played by Gary Oldman, an angry white peacock that wants to conquer all of China. His kung fu being nowhere strong enough, he has to turn to harnessed fireworks for his kingdom to turn into tools of war. A tad bit of sequelitis here. Really not the sequel bait that you want or need. They kind of have to pry open the story to make it interesting at all. But eventually, we do find out that Po's mysterious origins might be tied to this new threat. And this sends the Dragon Warrior and the Furious Five on a mission to liberate these kingdoms and find out why the markings of this force seem so eerily familiar to Po. I would say, sadly, this movie feels more like a direct-to-video sequel than a full-fledged release, like something we would see Disney do on the decline of the Renaissance in the 90s or through a subsidiary studio not wanting to tarnish their own brand. I would say, looking at the first film, I can understand the mistake of trying to up the action for the sequel, but in the process, it loses charm and even stakes around why we care in the first place. Most of all, the comedy writing is lacking here. Mm. This is the same writing team throughout all 4 films, so there's no real excuses. It's just, you know, when it works, it works. When it doesn't, it doesn't. Not only does this film feel less funny, but doesn't really try to tell as many jokes either. Perhaps focusing on death, murder, and revenge in your family movie doesn't translate to a fun time. So I don't want to be mean to the animators, as I really do care deeply about supporting the industry, supporting the art and the artists. But this movie doesn't look anywhere as good on screen, both for the energy of what's on screen and the aesthetics of the world.
That's shocking to me.
Oh, yeah.
You're so used to things improving. Like, you watch, you know, Toy Story 1, 2, 3, 4, and just see those improvements. Mm-hmm. To the fact where Toy Story 4 came out, I was wowed by how good that was.
Sure.
You just think there'd be natural jumps in, like, the tech, you know?
Absolutely. And to your point with the raising budget, I mean, 2 would be have the highest budget from what your research is.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, $5 million, but yeah. Sure, I feel like some of that's played out with, like, voice cast or whatever, you know?
Yeah, right. They have to get Gary Oldman somehow. Action scenes themselves are much less inventive, having an obsession including all characters at once rather than choreographing strong moments for the individuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is 2011, so I can't really call it like Marvel, but it really feels like these Josh Whedon shots of like, wow, we need every character on screen at once, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Josh Whedon was taking notes on this. the color palette of the film, and you can see this through screen grabs, is intentionally muted to match our villain. It's also kind of a dark chapter or darker chapter for Poe discovering. And this kind of obsession with red, black, and white makes things look worse. It's washed out and a little visually boring compared to the other entries in the series that I would say, are gorgeous.
Poppy.
To watch. Yeah.
Yeah, vibrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lastly, I think in the animation space, there's a lot more 2D animation thrown in, which oddly feels like cut corners. Hmm. This is exactly where this kind of direct-to-video vibe comes from, because... The 3D animation in all of these movies is excellent. The fur work, you know, the look of the animals and whatnot.
Yeah.
You see a jump in quality from projects like Shark Tale, Madagascar, and DreamWorks.
Okay,
Space.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
You see a big jump there, even in 2008. Here, though, there's these 2D flashbacks. I mean, it looks like... I don't know. It looks like flash animation. It looks like something you'd find on the internet or like a fan thing, you know? And there's a lot of these cutaways, and I feel like it takes away from rhythm of the film, but specifically to my critique of this animation is that they don't look great.
Right.
So as much as I like avoiding real critiques of animators and whatnot going on here, it's really the core problem to the film, I would say. Not funny, too much action, and overall kind of looking worse and feeling worse as a result. So... Overall, my notes are slim on this one. I would say kind of meh, kind of not worth it, but also don't get me wrong, it's still perfectly fine for a kids' movie and doesn't dip below an acceptable score. This will be contrary to Kung Fu Panda 3, which I thought was great, if not maybe one of the best. I would say this one is still a little bit of a skip, not saying it's, you know, so bad that you should avoid it altogether. With that said, we're going to go ahead and give Kung Fu Panda 2, 2011, a 52.
52. Okay, yeah. I guess if you want a continuation story, not one for the adults, one to just keep the kids entertained.
Yeah, and maybe this emphasis on action was trying to make something more for the adults, but...
More blockbuster, just more, basically.
Yeah.
I was wrong on Shrek 2, by the way. Shrek 2 made the most out of the Shreks.
Okay.
But now with so much animation after, it's not like... Top 10 on anything.
Oh,
really,
so you mean like the bar is kept on being set higher, like the Marios.
Right. Like at one point, it was very impressive. Now it's just kind of in the puddle in the mix.
I see.
But yeah, that Shrek 4 was 2010. Mm. So this was 2011, and you're right. It's kind of like, what do we do now?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
But okay, all right, so let's keep things going. This is now 2016. It's Kung Fu Panda 3. Yeah. So, Vin, how...
Let me ask you real quick.
Yeah.
Before you ask me how I like this movie.
Okay.
I love this movie. Would you prefer these being Kung Fu Panda, Dragon Warrior Strikes Again? Okay,
actually,
like the numbers, yeah.
Not only do I love the numbers, I like the fact there's not even a... there's not a Kung Fu Panda :
3.
2, 3, 4. It's just, boom, Kung Fu Panda 2. Kung Fu Panda 3. I love it.
Love it.
Love it. It's simple. I wish more people did this.
Okay.
I don't need... I don't need Mission Impossible
Dead Reckoning
- Part 1, you know?
Yeah, that's...
They did scratch that, by the way.
Oh, really?
The second one is not going to be Dead Reckoning Part 2 now.
Oh, it's just
it's
a new...
It's just going to a new name.
Oh, interesting.
Which I'm fine.
Yeah,
Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning - Part 2.
Yeah. They're both going to do bad in the box office, so...
Well, come on. It's not true. expecting big things from this last one, actually.
Listen, if you're going to give hot takes, you got to know how to take them, too.
Oh, by the way, the Batman got pushed back a whole other year.
Yes, so a whole ass year.
So it was going to be next year. Now it's 2026.
Yeah. Still October.
Very annoying. Yes, I know. But it's just like, oh, my gosh. But they did move Paul Thomas Anderson's.
And maybe something's going on with Robert Pattinson, because isn't that the same with Mickey 17?
No, but that was all because of posts.
Oh, okay.
And Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
There was some talk I saw that it might be a bad movie. And that's why they're putting it in the beginning
of the year. Wait, Mickey 17 or...
Mickey 17.
Oh, really?
There was some talk of that, yeah.
Interesting.
And so they put it in, like I said the other week, like Dubuary, kind of. But next January and February look way stronger than this January and February.
Okay.
So,
cool.
We'll see.
I'm certainly delighted to hear that.
But yeah, and then Paul Thomas Anderson's got a little bit more fast-tracked.
Yeah.
So that's at least good for 2025.
Sure.
Very annoying. Anyway, Kung Fu Panda 3, 2016. You gave the goat up already. You liked it. But,
I liked it.
Let's talk about story, characters. How was the animation? How'd you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I think my recommendation here is if you are a fan of the first, or if you, off the recommendations of this podcast, you're looking to watch the first one, what do you watch next? I say jump right to 3, honestly.
Okay.
It's a much better sequel. Sticks to the themes better.
Do the storylines matter, though? Like, do you need to be...
Honestly, 2 can be wrapped up real quickly, like in a sentence quickly.
Well, when we watched 4, when the previews were still going,
yeah.
I was just on Wikipedia looking at the plot for 3.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, boom, good.
Yeah, and we're good. Yeah, you lean over, you'll be like, I'll get right up on the lore. I go, I don't think there's much lore.
Yeah, you didn't.
I thought you meant for the episode. Like, you were going to be like, this is the origins of this Kung Fu.
Well, when we made plans, earlier in the week, and we were talking about, okay, we'll go see it on Saturday. Like, we made plans. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do some wiki research.
Yeah.
And what I meant by that, it's like, I'm going to learn about the plot to these films to catch myself. And you were like, oh, that's great. Maybe do some research on box office stuff. Yeah. I was like, he doesn't get what I'm trying to say.
He's like, I'm not watching these movies.
I'm coming off of Dune. I need transport me to the Peaceful Valley, whatever it's called.
The Jade Temple. Oh, man. Let's start with some DreamWorks talk. 2016 marks DreamWorks branching out with their IPs quite a bit, and proves to be a good market decision to keep their properties top of mind in the streaming space. Specific to Kung Fu Panda, the introduction of Po's family gave room for a few spin-off projects to capitalize on a bunch of cute, chubby bears, cute, chubby panda bears, just being easy kid grab. This includes a deal with both Netflix and Amazon Prime to bring animated series to their platform. These efforts also create a joint venture of Pearl Studios, a Chinese animation company partnered with DreamWorks to push their films to Eastern markets, and something I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet. Pearl Studios hasn't really done anything super major.
Don't even know the name, yeah.
Yeah, but this, for some reason, 3 really marked a branching effort with Kung Fu Panda that they want to grow it even further. Quite a bit.
It makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
Because especially the China market is really growing now as far as box office goes.
These are Chinese stories. No.
Very trying to tap that market. Yep. And that's why when you were talking, I was just like, why 2024? Why bring it back? Mm. And I was like, when did Universal, is there a Universal Studio Shanghai or Beijing or something like that? There was one that opened in 21.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying they need to keep the characters going a little
bit.
Yes,
absolutely. That's same with the streaming space. It's about recognition in this kind of kid market.
Yeah.
If they see Kung Fu Panda, guess what? They're going to want to see Kung Fu Panda in theaters. I mean, it goes back to just what commercials are on children's television.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we would love to be swept away in these magical worlds, it's hard not to think about, okay, we need to get the kids in here and really like this character, because we need them to also then bug their parents to go to Universal Studios and not Disney World if they had to pick or choose vacation.
As cold as that seems, I find that stuff really interesting because...
Oh, we'd love it.
I mean,
what's the angle? We're always looking for the
what's
angle.
What's the angle? But I also find that interesting when it comes to the animation space of how these animated projects that are, a machine, how it works. I think that's substance to understanding what the cinema as a market is, or at least in America.
See, and this is why I like Leica Studios, because they'll take as long as they need until they don't, and then they treat their staff like crap.
Right. Yeah, the commonality between all these studios is they treat their animators like crap.
But it's like they're not really tagged to anything major, like a Disney or something like that, I think. And they're kind of just always on the doing their own thing. They've disappeared for years because their last $100 million movie flopped terribly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Missing Link, right?
But I do like these floating animation studios that just do their own thing and have their own vibe, and then all of a sudden you get a Kubo.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Where the corporatism is not as – it doesn't reek as much off at those films.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even though probably – they could maybe use a tiny bit of that, you know, a dash of everything. directing alongside Jennifer U. Nelson is Alessandro Carloni. Similarly, a storyboard artist that worked on the franchise since the very first film and with DreamWorks from the very start as well. In Kung Fu Panda 3, Po gets reluctantly promoted to lead the Jade Temple as the ancient art of Qi is reintroduced to the world through a banished villain, Kai, a water buffalo, one of the more inspired choices of like the animals that they chose with this. Mm-hmm. I would say James Hong being a duck, really great, and this being Kai being a water buffalo. He's also voiced by J.K. Simmons, which absolutely kills it here. In a desperate search for training to combat this new Qi, the art of Qi, Po is able to finally reconnect with his panda family and true father, Lee, played by Bryan Cranston. As our enemy draws near, Po's allies dwindle due to the ancient magic Kai employs, sealing fighters in a spiritual prison. They kind of become like these stone jade zombies, turning them into vicious opponents. I would say, starting with some high praise here, I think the story does an excellent job at giving Po's family and friends something to do for the whole story, and an aspect that struggled alongside of underused voice work from a large cast for almost every entry here. The script here, why it works, is it has some fine-tuned back-at-the-ranch writing. If you're unfamiliar with the term, this basically means we have an A plot and a B plot, and it swaps back and forth to one another for spikes of action. In a lot of ways, this comes really close, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, this comes really close to one of the best to do it, Empire Strikes Back, in structure. Especially with Poe training in a foreign setting, Dagobah, Yoda, and our villain picking away from our supporting friends, Darth Vader, Bespin.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I won you over. Let's see.
It's an interesting contrast. I would say Empire really follows three beats, no?
No, I would say two.
I thought
it's Luke training and Han and Leia, basically.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I was going to say you got the Vader plot, you have the Harrison Ford plot, and then you have the Luke Yoda.
Sure. Overall, that Vader plot is what's kind of hunting through all of them, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
But I would say the...
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'm just like, let's not take 14 hours to go down that rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah, to not go down Star Wars. I would say, most of all, where this back at the ranch writing pays off is in the utilization of characters. It makes a very big highlight for nearly every character because they all get either a play in Poe's story, reconnecting with his family. Mainly a real big highlight for James Hahn, who has always been Poe's adopted father this whole time, and now in this like funny, awkward position, giving him an arc with substance. He's not just a side character. And then even among the Furious Five, characters that have kind of been brushed aside and not really been given substance, they all have their own little badass moment fighting Kai. It really is just a sharp script at making sure every character has something to do, somewhere involved, and a little bit of a moment to shine on screen.
Yeah,
so
that's kind
of, you know, like a kid's favorite of the Furious Five. Guess what? They get to see them in action.
That's very strong structure. Yeah. That's you're not wasted space. It's not just like, get this guy off the screen. Why are we in this story?
Absolutely.
If they make you care, very good.
Absolutely. And it makes sense then when, you know, again, among this kind of underused voice cast, you know, a Jackie Chan when he's not, you know, he's Jackie Chan. Like, why isn't he talking more? It makes sense because they're either taken out of the screen or just have that action bit. Mm-hmm. So, I would say I have even more praise than the first, with one pretty awesome opening sequence lifted
out of reality into this kind of spirit realm. I think the jade aesthetic of this entire film is pretty inspired work, and I don't say that lightly. Choosing to emphasize one color was a mistake the second film made, mm-hmm. but here it was able to highlight the design on screen in such a wonderful way. Everything is kind of like laced in jade or embedded with jade, and just an absolute gorgeous film. This shares the same quality that I praised with Puss in Boots, Last Wish, and The Bad Guys, where 2D animation flourishes are being put onto the final product to create a stunning visual. Mm-hmm. Once again, not to really beat up the second film in this franchise, but 2D was a way to cut away to flashbacks or to maybe cut corners on a complex scene that would be hard to tackle in 3D. Here, 2D and 3D are working together for one product.
That's cool.
Yep. One image. There are constantly impressive action scenes in this one with anime inspiration all over this, folks. From camera angles to set pieces to the rhythm of the fighting in a scene. I would say that comes equally with a cool bad guy that helps a lot with this. And that cool bad guy, why it works, is that he is a worthy foe for Poe. I thought J.K. Simmons did a great job here, and where in the last one, and the fourth film as well, there's too much of a gimmick to the opposition's threat. Kai, like Tai Lung, they are a real threat against Poe. I always forget the white peacock and the chameleon. I mean, that right there. They are threats to Poe by schemes, by gimmicks. You know, they're not a kung fu threat themselves.
Right, not a physical threat.
And I think that does a lot to sell stakes, sell us on the stakes, you know? Mm-hmm. This also hits on a quality I really didn't appreciate in the first film, and it comes into how the comedy is crafted. The comedy of the kung fu world building, of the world of Kung Fu Panda, is referencing these fun legends or artifacts throughout history. But secretly, what those are, in a script sense, are little jokes hidden for the voice cast to shine. This breaks up the very formulaic jokes, which either boil down to idiocy or Jack Black saying skadoosh, maybe one and the same. But, you know, having an obsession with these artifacts or these past legends in the Kung Fu history, that's where little jokes will get you out of nowhere. And I feel like that's where it also works for maybe an adult audience, that if it's referencing like an old movie or like Kill Bill or something like that, that's where it's going to work. And don't get me wrong, this is something, you know, this kung fu world building is definitely a presence in all of these films, repeat jokes, similar way. But here, between Poe's dad having the same wonder as his son, or even our villain collecting tools of the world, it just works so much better. It just works like the first one.
Right, right.
Honestly, this is a, like I said, like I opened up with, this is a way better sequel to the first. And I strongly say, you skip the second and go right to this. Viewing the story this way also hits harder in the cute drama between Poe's two dads, which I enjoyed a lot. And once again, a standout for James Hong, one of the hardest working actors to live, and really just might be better than the OG in a lot of ways for its comedic timing and sharp script. For my money, this is the funniest of the series, and that might be just the most important quality in judging these films as a kid film. We're going to go ahead and give Kung Fu Panda 3, 2016, a 77.
77, very good score.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is. That's a good score.
Absolutely.
Good movie. Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda 3. That's when you're at that level, now I'm interested in that.
Yeah, and I was curious after watching all these four movies where the kind of the critics landed on this. And three is kind of repeated as, or rather criticized as, a rewash of one. I feel like that's what makes it a good sequel to one in a lot of ways.
They just approve upon it.
Yep,
yeah,
exactly.
Where two, they just went in a bad direction.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. Well, before we get to Kung Fu Panda 4, we want to remind everybody we are going off the value for value model. If you go on the website, you're not going to see banner ads or any pop-up ads. You're not going to see any subscriptions or paywalls. We're not going to ask you to go to our Patreon and pay more money in order to get more content. All the content is out there. Vin and I are providing whatever value we can. Oh, it's the website, it's the podcast. It's just there for you. So technically it is free. It's out there. But that's how the value for value model works. We put it out there, and if you find it valuable, can you send some value back our way through monetary support? So you go to thedailyratings.com, you head to the donations tab, and you can donate whatever amount, make whatever monetary donation to us that you're feeling. So you want to do $4 this week, if that's a lot of money. If you want to do 40, 444 and 44 cents, it doesn't matter. You can pick whatever amount. The point is, if you're listening every week or enjoying the website or enjoying stopping by every week, if there's just a film here or there that you really care about and you love a breakdown of it, then, you know, that's value in your pocket. Can you just send us value back in our pocket? And that's a value for value model. We consider those who do donate producers of the show. Just like in Hollywood, when you financially support a project, you are a producer, a legit producer of that thing. So when you donate, you can send in a note along with that. You can email us a note at tom.vin@thedailyratings, or you can go ahead and type in a note when you donate there to PayPal. And you can include questions, comments, critiques, and you can just ask whatever you want. If you're going to be a producer of the Daily Ratings, that's important to us, and we want to take the time in this segment right here, the producer segment, to thank you, to read the note, and to address it. It's a through line to you. It's a way to communicate, and it's also say, hey, thanks for getting value from us, and thanks for sending value back our way. That's how we're doing it here. The more and more people listen, the more and more we hope it picks up. We're excited for some things this year. It's going to be a great 2024, and based on the numbers, we can see that people keep on coming back, and new listeners are here as well, which is just awesome. So it's at dailyratings.com. Head to the donations tab. All right, Vin. It's Kung Fu Panda 4. I was right along with you.
We have trading cards. Oh, a new segment on the podcast. We are doing card openings. No. So,
yeah, a wonderful shock to us. Vin and I walk in, and the woman goes, okay. She goes, do you want your trading cards? And Vin goes, no. And me, I'm going, oh, come on. Yeah. Come on. He goes, okay.
All right.
Two grown men going to see Kung Fu Panda 4. And we have our four trading cards
also,
in hand.
What actually I have secondhand cringe over is how quickly we left the theater. Like, everyone was sitting down, waiting for you. Listening to the end credits, and we were just like, ah, we're out.
I was thinking about what lunch to get.
Yeah. I got Poe.
Yeah, that's it. It's like four characters in the film.
Right, right.
I got Poe, and then
I got Poe.
I have four Poes.
No way. I have
sucks.
I have Poe. Are these all Poe?
Oh, wow.
Why did we get four?
We got duped.
Oh my god. The Poe market is so inflated already. These are like nickel rares.
Did you get four Poes?
Yeah, I got four.
You got four Poes?
This was so.
Oh wow.
Who knows if this will make it to the episode, folks?
They gave us trading cards. They gave us eight Poes.
Eight Poes.
That's freaking ridiculous.
You know what I gotta
nice
say?
Packaging, by the way.
You know what I gotta say to that? Skadoosh. No.
All right. Kung Fu Panda 4 with Poe and all the friends are back. Let's get into it. You've already let us know you are not hot on it.
Yeah.
I will say the same thing. I'm not hot on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's get into it a little bit. It seems like the smallest voice. I mean, everything is less. Like I said, because of they've cut the budget by like $50 million. Mm-hmm. You're going to get that in voice acting. I think you're going to get cuts on animation.
Mm.
I was specifically looking at the fur. And I was specifically unimpressed by the fur
really?
And the overall animation.
Interesting. I think when it comes to areas like that, I'm with you on the fur. They did do some impressive work with like the city and whatnot. I thought that was all right. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't wowed. I just. Which I don't know if I'm supposed to be. Again.
No, I think even the internet consensus on this is like, why? You know?
Yeah.
Why bother?
You know, we view movies now different than kids, you know, walking into a film like this, but it just reeks of corporatism, this one. You know,
it does.
And let's be honest, we both really kind of enjoyed Puss in Boots: Last Wish.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I thoroughly enjoyed watching that whole thing.
Yep, yep.
This comes around and it's like, all right, what are we doing for lunch after this? Let's get into it. How did you like Kung Fu Panda 4?
Like I said, my hot take for the whole franchise is it goes in pairs. 1 and 3 and unfortunately 2 and 4. As is the case with many animated projects, we get one last director swap for the franchise. Mike Mitchell is both a director and animator. He's got a weird peppered career. Everything from directing Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. to projects within DreamWorks, like the first Trolls movie, which is clearly very successful.
Yeah.
So Stephanie Stein co-directs here. You know, while she's a little newer to to DreamWorks, she's worked on some of the largest animated projects of the last year, but now stepping into her first director role. So
okay.
I would say expect to see her when Kung Fu Panda 5 comes around as the main director. So,
can I get a quick note on that, too?
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about it in previous episodes. Mm. Just very quick take on this co-director business. That has been what's the deal for a while now, especially
yeah.
10 years.
I, from my understanding, why it happens in the animating space, in the big studio animations, is that it's almost like a, not a master apprenticeship, but you take someone under your wing that is a rising talent.
Yeah.
This is not training, but it is a shared burden to try to lead this this animated directing project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, animated directing is very different than real directing. If anything, more complex, because it's more about team organization, vision, obviously the animation studio industry is a whole different beast than actually directing a real film.
Yeah,
you know,
very strange, whole different world.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, I personally don't know if this co-directing, this paired up. I think probably Pixar not invented it, but created it as a trend in the industry.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's hugely successful.
Because if you look at
the projects,
mm-hmm, yeah.
They're all, I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe the quality dips a little bit, but hard to say. Hard to say from a bird's eye, mm-hmm. Just looking at this. Either way, here, DreamWorks is, as a studio, has grown a lot since 2016. We have seen them grow tremendously, in fact, to a handful of new IPs that paved the way for new generations of animators and new guests of the theme parks, as you've been saying, Tom. Projects like Boss Baby and The Bad Guys are some of my favorite the studio has done, period. So I had high hopes for this film. Sadly, like I said, unfortunately, this is paired with the second one where it has a little too much action, a little too little jokes, and produces kind of a bland movie in between those two features. So, in this entry, Poe is once again progressing in his role as Dragon Warrior of the Jade Temple, but now must find a successor as he moves on to be the spiritual leader that his master Oogway once was. This transition comes at a poor time, though, as news of a deadly shape-shifting chameleon stirs up old enemies pulling from Poe's past. The fantastic Viola Davis lends her menacing voice to this new villain, but much like the second film, isn't a direct threat enough for Poe to face. It's a indirect threat mm-hmm. for Poe to face. Kind of loses some stakes in between there. The core of this film kind of attempts a Spider-Man No Way Home nostalgia grab, where old villains are pulled into the story. But I would say it's so true. Yeah.
I'm glad that it.
But I would say it's a huge miss because it doesn't stick the landing by not getting the old voice cast to go along with them. Like when they pull Lord Shen or whatever, the peacock, mm-hmm. it sounds like a peacock. It's not Gary Oldman.
Right.
same with Kai and J.K. Simmons. The only person they bring back is
Ian McShane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Poe takes on this challenge while simultaneously seeking a new dragon warrior with his new fox thief friend Zen. Voiced by, you guessed it, Awkwafina.
We're fans of Awkwafina.
Yes. I've been I've been kind of making fun of her inclusion in everything.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
she's becoming Awkwafina. She was in that movie Renfield,
mm.
which not a lot of people saw, but that Nick Cage Dracula movie earlier in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
She was in a film way early on the podcast, and you had good things to say.
Mm, yeah.
And when I realized her name, I thought her name was funny. But now she's in like the past three major animated films.
Yeah, she was in, we didn't cover it, but Illumination's Migration.
Oh, she was?
Which was the big December release.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she was in Migration.
Yeah.
She was in this. She was in
Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was a fourth one then.
Yeah, I could only imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she does have a good voice. She has a good...
Yeah, a voice that lends itself to animated characters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally fine with the casting of it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it just works. And some people just have that... You can't just pick anybody and stick them in a movie.
Mm.
There's another actor, Alan Tuktuk, I think.
Oh, yeah,
he plays Steve the Pirate in Dodgeball, and he's in many other things. But you look at his thing, he's all over animated films.
Isn't he the pilot in Firefly?
Oh, yeah. But he's huge in the animation world.
Yeah.
And he just has a voice. He's able to do a very good kind of cartoony, just good for roles. Yep. And Awkwafina is very much becoming that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As far as the kind of the overall feel of this film, I can't stress enough, in so many areas, it feels exactly like the second one. It's nowhere as funny. But also as a result of telling less jokes, it's shooting less, as we've talked about you know, our Zucker Abrams Zucker study in an Airplane. You know, if you shoot less, you make less buckets.
Right.
Slightly too much action, which again an interesting problem. You think more action would be the key? It's really not, and I would say just far too much backstory. The backstory really just weighs down the pacing of this. The major exposition dump at the beginning started this one with a crawl. And not even just to catch up the audience, but rather to, it felt like it was prying the story open for another sequel. This is the definition of sequelitis. You know, this is like, how do we make a story out of this that was, you know, kind of a bow on top? Yeah. Especially coming after the third one where Poe finds his family and it's all kumbaya, you know what I mean?
I know, it's like we're 8 years later.
right. I think the story and the plot of this really shows it's 16 years of age, especially with side characters getting more development than our main. Yeah, obviously, I'm happy that there is kind of a shared love, you know, more room for those voice actors. Obviously, a critique that I had of the previous three films, but feels like more than ever, Poe has so much less to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Voice acting, I would say, is a mixed bag here. On a positive, we get a lot of new talent. Awkwafina, a.k.a. the Rosie O'Donnell of the 2020s, is here. Yeah. I was hoping you weren't going to steal that joke.
There was no shot of that.
Like I said, Viola Davis, you know, sold me on the chameleon as a villain, but I think there's just a misstep with that villain, is that she's falsely introduced as Tai Lung returning, and it's just a stumble for an early hook, you know, where that first scene, it should have just been her, you know?
Yeah, good voice acting.
Yeah.
I didn't think she was doing something different where it doesn't sound directly like her, I would say. But I gotta tell you, just chameleon, you know? Okay.
Yeah.
It's a little, I kept on thinking about Rango, and then there was another chameleon, forgets in somewhere, but it's just a Geico Gecko and Rango on screen.
Sure. And where it seems silly that I praise, like, the choice of a water buffalo as, like, inspired for this kind of, like, Chinese story. Like,
right.
I don't know. I felt like there was a drop ball as well in what type of animals we see, or, you know, animals anthropomorphized or whatever. So I think on a positive as well, we get a handful of Asian casting choices, such as comedian Ronnie Cheng and Oscar winner Ki-hee Kwan. I kind of like seeing that. On the other hand, we are missing a lot of other voice actors. The entirety of the Furious Five, in addition to my comment about missing some of the previous villain voice actors, I'm not quite sure if it was worth it. But I guess it all makes sense when you look at the budget that they had to cut corners somewhere, and you know. Having Angelina Jolie maybe say like three lines was not worth it, you know?
Yep, so. I think absolutely. And I think maybe we're talking a rebrand here. If take a pause for 8 years, come out with this, and I wouldn't be surprised then if 3 years down the line we get five, 3 years down the line we get six, and then we have a saga.
Yeah, true. Very true. I think another positive here is the music is pretty fun. And a nice change up from the traditional stylings of the series so far. There is a Chinese rendition of Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne, which just feels like something that Jack Black had to throw in there as an addition.
It was a good ad, yeah.
Tenacious D fans can rejoice as we get a full cover of Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time for the credits, with Jack Black absolutely killing his pipes. The music really, besides my Hans Zimmer jokes, has not really been a highlight in any of these films. It hasn't. There's never really been a moment that I was like, "Wow, you know, that was something else." Here, these kind of these Chinese traditional sounding renditions of pop songs, I think, is a good match. I feel like that's fun, and that maybe can be something that parents enjoy in addition to just kids kind of hearing.
So that was not a highlight of any others.
No.
So that would have been cool to be a follow through. It from one through four, and it becomes part of it a bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or Jack Black was suggesting what rock songs to adapt and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah. Other than that, I really wish I could say that this fourth movie was the swan song of the series, but it really is only slightly better than the lowest. It seems like the other critics are scratching their head as well on this one. And like I always say, with kids' movies, I weigh the theater experience a bit higher. And correct me if I'm wrong, we didn't really have a lot of laughs.
No, it wasn't that packed. But yeah. No, there wasn't much going on in the theater with the kids. Yeah. There was a decent amount of kids in there, too.
Exactly. And I feel like other than like some excited chatter at the beginning, it didn't seem to be doing a great job at, you know, landing with them.
Yeah.
I know with me, this just felt in totality exactly like the second one. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of my gauge on it. So don't really have much more to say. I don't know, Tom.
I didn't really like this film.
Yeah,
really coming down with it. I felt like there was another film that I kind of felt similar where tough to hate this movie. I cannot praise this movie in any way. Mm-hmm. And really, it came across as lackluster.
Yeah.
The jokes, no.
Yeah.
The jokes weren't working for the kids in theater. There was not laugh out loud moments.
Right.
And definitely for the parents. They were such cheap jokes, such dumb writing that we've seen tried time and time again and has never hit.
Yep.
So the jokes are bad. You're right. And it's not a lot of jokes per minute. Mm. Maybe that you would expect in some of these big franchise animated films.
Right.
And then,
one and three, the jokes are kind of weaved in the action. They're weaved in the world building.
That's cool.
And it's telling more jokes that way.
Yeah.
Here, not so much.
I mean, there's stuff in Puss in Boots that legit, like, I'd laughed out loud. Like,
yeah,
I did an open chuckle. I watched Puss in Boots again, I think, a second time.
Really?
When it was on just in TV, on the TV in my living room. And there was like two things that got
That's great.
Because some of the characters were just funny and just the callbacks to stuff.
Yeah.
This one was just like flat.
Mm.
And nothing felt, the action felt cheap. The jokes were cheap. And really, when as adults you can sit there and love that cast, you know, and you kind of, you kind of feel it. I don't know. And it just feels like an event almost.
Mm-hmm.
This with the kind of the B team, mm-hmm. as far as voice actors goes, you know, the whole thing was just lackluster.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
And it came out of it just being like, oh, we're doing lunch after this? I mean, it wasn't much.
That's what the kids were saying.
Yeah.
A cocktail after this? Steak? Yeah. So, not to be a bummer with this, I feel like the good news from this episode is 1 and 3. That is a phenomenal doubleheader. And
oh,
like,
nice. That's cool.
You know, really, like, just like done.
Yeah.
You know? Obviously, I'll be here for when 5 comes out. Maybe we won't cover it. I don't know. But
yeah, no, we have to.
For now, we're going to go ahead and give Kung Fu Panda 4 a 53.
Wow. Okay. Literally a tick above Kung Fu Panda 2. That's where they belong.
It's hard to explain. I mean, folks, maybe write in if you've seen the second one with your family and are watching this fourth one. I really do feel identical about these two movies.
Yeah.
Identical.
Okay. So. I think no surprise coming over here. This is a one shoe situation. We got no laces going on. This is just a Tommy Two Shoe one shoe.
This
That's
is out
it.
The door.
Yeah. No one shoe and a smile. No one shoe shine. Nothing. Just one shoe.
One shoe and a smile. I love the percentage ticks.
I forget
of,
what I gave that one. I think that was Lisa Frankenstein. I forget.
One shoe and a smile.
Okay. All right. So, you know. We'll see what happens. I mean, I think you did hear that they're going to try to do 5, correct?
The director said so. So I think Mike Mitchell said so, that like 5's in the works. So
The best part about dropping the budget is that threshold to make money is not as high. So
true.
We'll see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised. I think they're bringing back the Dragon movies as well, right?
Yeah. They are bringing back How to Train Your Dragon. I'll be interested to check those out because those have a huge amount of hype.
It'd be a fun watch.
And like Kung Fu Panda and How to Train Your Dragon, both have had animated series on the streaming platforms to kind of continue their lifespan, or maybe even more importantly, grab new eyes that have not seen the movies. So
you're right. Yeah, but that really tried to stretch its legs out a little bit.
Absolutely, I think it's a good move too because I can't speak to the quality of the shows, but it's getting it in front of their demographics' eyes, and that's all that matters.
From a business perspective, it works. Yes, content perspective.
Sure.
Look at Disney. You know, or I was going to say, look at Star Wars.
Right.
But
and we come back. We got them.
Okay, all right. Looking at these scores, looking at this week or in the future, anything you want to touch on, add on, roll credits? What are we doing?
Super excited for next week.
Yeah.
You know, when Anton Chigurh flips that coin and he says skadoosh.
Wonderful. That really got you. I mean, the first time Jack Black, we were watching the theater, he says skadoosh, and you're laughing, you like elbow me. You're like, it's just like,
I love it because it's just, it's not a word. Like, it's just, it's so Jack Black. It's, I hope when Jack Black eventually dies, he says skadoosh as his last words.
After lowering the coffin in the ground.
Yeah, skadoosh.
All right, Vin, thank you so much. folks, yes, like for the thousandth time, we're excited for the new type of special next week. We're doing No Country for Old Men, whole new format, different thing. There are spoilers, but very, very excited. Vin, thank you so much for watching these four films. Thanks for stopping by tonight. Folks at home, we'll run it down one more time. We have Kung Fu Panda with a 75%, Kung Fu Panda 2 with a 52%, Kung Fu Panda 3 with a 77%, and Kung Fu Panda 4 with a 53 1 shoe. Woo! Okay, the panda pandemonium is over.
It's done.
Thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll see you next week on the Daily Ratings Podcast. Hey, if you enjoyed the podcast, if you would, give us a good rating or get the word out and tell a friend about us. And just a reminder, folks, that the Daily Ratings is completely producer supported. We want to stay away from advertising, and we don't want to have any paywalls or tier structures or subscriptions. It's all just value for value. So, are you finding value in any of the things we're doing here at the Daily Ratings? Then become a producer and donate whatever amount of value that is. Just go to the donations tab on thedailyratings.com, and while you're there, be sure to check out the massive amount of films that Vince has rated. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Daily Ratings Podcast.